Welcome back to Silver Screen Social, listeners. I'm your host, Jackson Vickery, and on this special bonus episode, I spoke to BAFTA-nominated composer Vince Pope about his work on this season of True Detective. Please enjoy the teaser of tonight's episode, Episode 4, before the interview begins.
You got six dead bodies in the local ice rink. You have protests around the mine. You need to get this shit under control.
Video. There aren't any ice caves near where her body was found.
It's a death trap. There were a bunch of accidents up there years ago. The men are out there looking for Clark.
Where is he hiding?
It takes us one by one.
There's nothing except us.
We're all in the night country now.
How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Very good.
Excellent.
Where are you in LA? Where are you?
No, I'm in Dallas, Texas, actually.
Dallas, okay. I've been speaking to a few different people in a few different places. I'm always keen to know where the various people. What's it like in Dallas?
Right now it's not too bad. I was in Park City for Sundance for about a week and a half, and so I don't see that much snow really ever in my life, and I honestly felt like I was in an episode of this season of True Detective by some of my drive homes at night, because it was just pitch black and there wasn't much besides me and my headlight. So it was just a sort of surreal feeling, but it's good to be back on Dallas soil. And yes, thankfully
there aren't many ski resorts in Dallas, I'm guessing.
None in Dallas or in Texas, for that matter. I mean, the only skiing I think I've ever done, and that was terribly, was water skiing.
I tried water skiing once, but I don't think I even got standing up on two feet. I was just constantly dragged through the water.
I have horrific balance, so I am flat right back into the water. So I think it was like three attempts and then I was pulled out.
Sure. Yeah. I snowboard quite a lot, actually. I managed to that's my one thing I do on a board. I've never been to Sundance, but actually knowing that it's really like in or next to a ski resort, I have to say, really is very tempting.
Yeah, it could be a 2025 or a 2026 goal of yours to get there and to go to Deer Valley and do some skiing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love that. But I'm so excited to be chatting with you. I am such a fan of this season of this show. It just completely turned on a switch that was just like ramped up times 100, and I was so excited. I mean, just the first episode, just kicking it into sort of full throttle, and it's just been such a joy just getting into this season and getting into just, I mean, all of what they're having to endure. And I'm curious, how does it feel for you to be a part of such a huge franchise, but also knowing that this is its own sort of special season?
Yeah, it feels great. I mean, it's been such a joy to work on from start to finish. You know, it's taken up quite a lot of last year, probably 10 months, 9 or 10 months. And in actual fact, you know, that's quite long for a six episode season of something. But it's been a joy, a real pleasure. I've worked with Issa before, the showrunner and creator. I worked on her feature film a few years ago. So we have a real sort of creative understanding. So it's nice to come into something where, you know, you sort of already got a creative bond with the person who's, well, she created this season and wrote and directed, you know. So she's been, I mean, she's like a complete phenomenon, really, in terms of her energy and ability to kind of, you know, make sure everything is done the way she wants it.
Mm. And so what were those early conversations with her like in regards to this particular season?
Yeah, I mean, so Issa has a very good, in general, she's very good at kind of knowing what she wants. And the early conversations were around, I mean, have you seen the all six episodes? Or I don't want to give you any.
No, I have
You've
only
seen the
they are guarding those episodes
three. Gone.
under lock and key, so I am only caught up to three.
Sorry. In that case, yeah, just gives me an idea of how much I can say or not say in terms of what you know and what you don't know. But yeah, so I mean, this series is very much delves into that kind of, is it real? Is it spiritual? Is it imagined? You know, is it actually, you know, something that's, you know, coming together from the mind and the difficult forces? So, the conversations initially were kind of around, you know, how do we have the kind of the horror tropes and the kind of, you know, the kind of normal, kind of very scary elements that a Skull would have. How do we combine that with this sense of otherness, you know, spirituality, ghosts, imagined? Because actually, the interesting thing also about that side of the feature of the show is that the spiritual elements are not necessarily always dark. You know, it's this idea that we do kind of get visited, or we can be visited from spirits, and they can be good and they can be bad, and they can, you know, they can steer us. So in fact, I think the Fiona Shaw character, Rose Aganow, she talks about this. There's a very interesting scene, I think, in episode two, where she talks about, you know, that spirits come back, and sometimes they come back for good reasons, sometimes they come back, you know, for not so good. So yeah, we had conversations around, you know, this dark, this light, the spirituality, the place, you know, how can we kind of set that and you know, make that work musically.
And I'm curious where you started to draw some of the influences for the series, because I mean it's set in, I mean, just this desolate sort of ice desert, ice tundra, and but I mean there's so many beautiful characters that are that are so layered and rich, and I'm just curious where you sort of pull, I mean, all of your sort of influences to create this.
Yeah, I definitely like to try and, you know, it's interesting because you talk about, you know, the kind of the tundra and the landscapes, and I did have sort of, you know, kind of brainstorming where I'm just kind of thinking into what does that conjure up for me, you know, what if I'm thinking about Alaskan landscapes and the dead of night and snow and wind, you know, what am I hearing? So I did, there are sort of, you know, various different sort of incarnations. At one stage I was playing with the idea of like having a bowed guitar, which is so kind of like you kind of know what this sound is, but you don't, and it's kind of quite vast. But actually that didn't really work in the end. So then I kind of experimented. Actually, something that did make the soundtrack, which was this instrument called a fujara, which is a very large Czechoslovakian woodwind instrument, which I kind of, because I got to thinking about woodwind and, you know, the breathy nature of woodwind, but at the same time, obviously flutes and kind of high instruments weren't going to do it. So I was researching deeper wind instruments, and this is kind of the deepest of the deep, really. It's like 2 meters. It's about twice the size of a bassoon. And there aren't that many people that play them. And I heard this recording of one that was actually done in a church as well, which really piqued my interest, because you had this very large woodwind instrument kind of using the reverbs of the church. And it kind of like, oh yeah, okay, I could do something with this. So that's become a sort of integral part of the atmospheres that you hear in the score. Yeah, and going back to the spiritual element, the other element that has come in, which I think works really well, is voices, because voices can be sinister. You know, they can be They can be very human. They can be very warming. And so it was a real sort of, it was a pleasure. I worked with the choir, and I also worked with Tanya Tadak, who's like this amazing Canadian throat singer. And we got some great stuff, you know, using voices. I think it works really well.
Mm. And can you dive that into that just a bit more, into the choir and into the throat singers? That's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, so Tanya Tadak, she's a very well-known Canadian throat singer, and that's a Native American style of singing where, I mean, it's sort of, I'm not even going to attempt to do what she does, but it's, as the name would suggest, it's a very kind of guttural sort of throat. It's more of a noise than what one would call singing, and it can be very percussive. So she came over actually, and we did some sessions together. I'm just experimenting with that sound, and it made sense to have that sound as well, because obviously this series is set in the fictional town of Ennis, which is in Alaska, where they still have the Native American people living. So it worked on, you know, on every kind of level. And then the choir sort of supplemented that, that became the sort of the voice of flashback, if you like, and memory and the spirituality that the people who are in the series are sort of experiencing. You know, they're experiencing people coming from the dead and people speaking to them from beyond. So yeah, so that it felt quite natural, you know, this kind of choral, angelic, and in some places quite angelic sounding choir to complement the soundtrack in that way.
Mm. And our sort of two main leads in this, Danvers and Angelique, I'm just curious what their sort of evolution you've seen so far in regards to the composition, and sort of seeing how their sort of two tracks are going in terms of the score.
Sure. I mean, with Navara, I leant more into the spiritual nature, because she really brings to the, I mean, there is this antagonism in the two characters played by Carly and Jodie. Carly, who's playing Navara, on the one hand, she's quite accepting of this other realm of being, of consciousness, and Jodie, who plays the character of Danvers, who's much more, no, you know, it's only science that exists, you know, it's finding the clues and we'll solve the crime. So with those two things, I could lean more into the kind of the voices and the spiritual elements with Navara, and then with Danvers it was more sort of archetypal, kind of obvious detective kind of motifs, if you like.
Mm. And in comparison to past projects, I mean, what was the sort of key challenge in cracking True Detective season 4?
I think, I mean, as with all things, I think to a certain extent, it's you know, when I create a soundtrack, I want to create a soundtrack that if you hear it on its own, you'll get an idea that it's from, you know, True Detective season 4, Night Country, rather than just a soundtrack that could play to any detective series. So that's always one of the challenges, you know, to put a unique stamp on the sound of the soundtrack, because then you're doing the best that you can for what you're seeing. You know, you're creating something that is unique and interesting. So in terms of the biggest challenges, I mean, I think, yeah, it actually was relatively, I wouldn't say easy, but because it's such a kind of, it's such a place that it's set, you know, Alaska and this, you know, it's constant night, because that's such, you know, it's plays such a big part, it's almost like another character within the series. In a sense, it kind of was kind of easy to find stuff that could help that. Yeah, I suppose it might be more troublesome, you know, when you're, if you're playing to just like an archetypal detective series or you know, where the setting doesn't matter as much, then in a sense you might have more of a challenge, I suppose, to make it unique. But you know, there are so many things to lean into. You know, as you say, the tundra, the Alaskan landscapes, the snow, the Native American element of the show, the spirituality. You know, there are quite a lot of kind of heavy themes going there. So you know, it was fun.
And besides this being a fantastic piece of drama on television, I wonder what you hope that audiences take away from this particular series of television.
I mean, I can only speak, you know, from what I like to see. I like to see something that makes me think, you know, and I come away from it and go, oh, okay. And yeah, leave something with you after the event. And I think this, I mean, we're on episode three now. I think that played out Sunday night. It gets better and better. And I can guarantee that the last episode, and this is something that means a lot to me, you know, the last episode and what you're left with to me is almost the most important thing. You know, if you've had this amazing five episodes and then you get to the final episode and the final episode is kind of like, oh, that, okay. It can, you know, it can be disappointing. This really gives you something at the end. So, yeah, I think it's about leaving you with something that makes you think, you know, and question, you know, what is going on? Is everything that we, you know, reality?
And two final questions for you. If you could describe the last three episodes in three words, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good one. The last three episodes. Exciting, riveting, and totally brilliant. Sorry, that's four words, isn't it?
No, that's fine. And then final
Disappointing.
question for you, what's next?
What's next? Well, I'm taking a little break because last year was super busy with True Detective, and I also did another series which actually it has been so crazy over here that the Prime Minister has been talking about it. It's a thing called Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, which was a drama about like a scandal in the UK. So anyway, it was crazy busy last year. True Detective being the icing on an amazing year. But I am recording some of my own material. I actually have started releasing albums as well over the last sort of 3 4 years of my own stuff, and so I'm off to Belgium in a couple of weeks to record with the Echo Collective, who are like a string ensemble, and you could say yeah, just for fun. But yeah, watch the space. If you like the music in True Detective, then you can hear music I create purely for fun very soon.
Love that. But Vince, I want to thank you so much for chatting with me today.
It's been a pleasure.